This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Tony is not hosting the show today. My name is Peter Sprigg. I'm a senior fellow for policy studies at the Family Research Council in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gasek, Peter's colleague here in Washington.
And we're filling in for Tony the remainder of this week,
right.
Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, because of the emergency which Tony and his family are dealing with, along with so many hundreds of thousands of other people in Louisiana with the flooding. Those of you who listened to the program yesterday when Ken Klukowski, our former colleague, was hosting the program, heard Tony give a report in person about the status of the situation down there, including the fact that he and his family had to evacuate their home. And
In a boat.
And are now living in a motorhome, which they moved to higher ground. They were able to move to higher ground, but their house, the interior of their house, is basically ruined. And they're having to gut the house. And so we would ask you all to pray for the people in Louisiana. There is a sense, I think, among some of us that because this natural disaster did not involve, sudden high winds the way that a hurricane or a tornado does, that it hasn't gotten the attention perhaps that it deserves. But this has been a catastrophic event for people in Louisiana. And if you've seen any of the pictures, you understand. And then those pictures of houses partially or completely underwater are very widespread throughout the a large part of that state. So please join us in praying for the people of Louisiana, and specifically praying for Tony Perkins himself, who's suffered directly down there in his home and his home church, which has been damaged, although they're intact enough to be able to serve as a staging area for some of the relief work being done by Samaritan's Purse. And I'll use that as the transition to urge you that if you'd like to help with the flood relief in Louisiana, we are encouraging people to give or even to volunteer through Samaritan's Purse. Of course, this is the relief organization headed by the Reverend Franklin Graham. And you can go to tonyperkins.com, the website for this radio program, tonyperkins.com. There's a link there for Louisiana Flood Relief, or to the regular Family Research Council website, frc.org/flood. And you can get a link to see how you can help in Louisiana. And
we right. It's, it, well. The water levels are so bad that they were essentially, they get 2 feet of rain in some places in the course of something like 24 hours. I mean, that's just, you have one of these sort of tropical waves that move through and it just stopped there and it didn't go anywhere for a couple of days and just dumped this, massive amount of water on. And then, areas that had never really been flooded like this have been completely inundated with water levels going like, twice the level above flood stage for a local river that they had ever seen for
right.
flooding.
Right. right.
So,
right.
I mean, that's just sort of how this happens. But this really is one of these once every several hundred years kind of storms because people have been in Louisiana for several hundred years, and I don't think they've ever seen anything like this.
Yeah. And as, we often hear, most people do not have flood insurance.
Right.
It's a relatively unusual thing for people
for
to actually invest
that,
in it.
In that area.
In that area. So that leads me to my next remark, which is that we will be welcoming your calls during the final segment of the show today, which begins at 42 minutes after the hour, 42 minutes into the program. You're welcome to call about any of our subjects that we discuss in today's program, but we are especially interested in hearing from any listeners, if any have enough electricity to be listening to the radio right now, in Louisiana. If you live in Louisiana and you've been impacted by the flooding, we would be interested in hearing your personal stories. You can call us at this number. It's 1-866-372-8255. 7234. Once again, we'll be taking your calls during the final segment of the program at 42 minutes after the hour. And the number is 1-866-372-7234. Now, I want to go right into our first guest, who is Dr. Michelle Critella, is the president of the American College of Pediatricians, and they have just released an important new paper on gender dysphoria in children. Dr. Critella, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on the program.
Now, maybe for those who need to start at the beginning, can you give us a brief definition of gender dysphoria and how it manifests itself in children?
Sure. Gender dysphoria is the medical term for, let's say, transgender. In children, this would be seen in, let's say, a little boy believing he's a little girl, or the little girl believing she is actually a boy.
Right.
a lot of people think that it's simply cross playing or cross dressing, but in fact, with gender dysphoria, the children are very distressed by their biological sex and believe that they are really the opposite sex, and they often express that.
So a tomboy is not experiencing gender dysphoria. I mean,
the girl
who likes to climb trees and throw rocks or something.
Just being a little bit non-traditional.
Right. That's not gender dysphoria. Okay.
But that's right. Now, unfortunately, with all of the activism at large in the culture, some children who truly do not have a psychological problem but may just be going through a phase, they may just be non-traditional boys or tomboyish girls, they can be misdiagnosed as the gender dysphoria. So when I speak about it, I want to be very clear. We are talking about children who are upset with their biological sex and express that they are the opposite sex. That's the true psychological issue.
Okay. Now, some of these children who experience this gender dysphoria are being subjected to a new type of protocol in terms of treatment by people who support the transgender movement that involves very serious, possibly, serious medical interventions with potentially lifelong effects. Can you explain what is being done with or to children who have gender dysphoria?
Yeah, but what we at the College of Pediatricians and other physicians as well are very concerned about is young children prior to puberty. So we're talking children younger than age 11 who express that they say, I think I'm the opposite sex. If they go to a gender clinic, these families are being told, go ahead, have your child act and live like the opposite sex, and then we will put them on puberty blockers, puberty blocking hormones, so that way they can continue to live as the opposite sex and see if that is who they really are, quote unquote. Now, this is very frightening because puberty blocking hormones, they prevent these young children from having the normal brain development that they otherwise would be getting. They prevent the children from, if they're little girls, it prevents the little girls from forming eggs. If it's little boys, it prevents little boys from forming sperm. So that if these children do as the doctors say, they go back to their families and schools, act as though and live as though they're the opposite sex, stay on the puberty blockers until they're older, closer to age 16. At that age, now the doctors are ask them, would you like to have cross-sex hormones now? So that if you're so the biological boy who's been on puberty blockers, living like a girl, is now offered estrogen. So at that point, if he says, if that biological boy and his family say, yes, we think he really is a girl and he's been impersonating and living as a girl and seems happy, let's put him on that estrogen, he will be infertile for life. He will also now face all the side effects of being on estrogen, which includes blood clots, strokes, heart attack risk, and so forth.
Now, one of the key facts that is brought out in your paper as well, which I just read this afternoon, and I have to say, it's one of the best scientific medical documents on this subject that I've read. But one of the points is that research has shown that children who experience gender dysphoria before puberty do not necessarily grow up to be transgender. Isn't that right?
That's right. The vast majority of young children, the vast majority of children younger than age 11 who believe they're the opposite sex, if you do not encourage them, if instead you affirm their biological sex and you allow them to go through natural puberty, by the time they're young adults, they're okay with their they identify with their biological sex. Yes, I was born a boy. I really am a boy. The vast majority, over 80% of children younger than age 11, if you encourage them to identify with their biological sex, go through puberty, they will come out okay.
So this raises serious questions about whether it's wise or even ethical to encourage young children to be making life-changing decisions about their gender identity when they don't have the maturity to do that, and when questions of informed consent?
Right, we fully agree. It is not possible even for a teenager. We know that young children and teenagers do not have the cognitive maturity of adults. I mean, that's obvious. That's why, you know, there are age limits on driving, drinking, voting, et cetera. I mean, this is obvious common sense, but we also have the brain studies and brain scans to prove it. So it is absolutely unethical to be putting these decisions in the laps of children and their parents, because, you know, parents are being misinformed.
Is this
because of the culture war within which we live? Science is being misrepresented, and parents are being misinformed. And parents are basically being told, you must affirm your child's false belief, because if you don't, they will kill themselves.
Yes, our time's just about up here. I'm sorry, I could talk with you a lot longer about this, but certainly this is not being driven by scientific discoveries or findings. That's one of the key points. This is being driven, unfortunately, by ideology.
Yes, it is. It really comes down to the entire culture war. We're living in an age of soft nihilism versus Orthodox Christianity. And really, that's what it comes down to. It's ideology versus Orthodox Christianity.
Okay.
Some people talk about natural law philosophy.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Critella, American College of Pediatricians at acpeds.org. We'll be right back.
What does it mean to be equal? According to the dictionary, equal means the same for each person. Last year, the so-called Equality Act was introduced in Congress by adding sexual orientation and gender identity as protected categories under federal civil rights law. This act would give special perks to some people just because they identify as homosexual or transgender. It's important to remember that many bills introduced in Congress have positive-sounding titles that hide their true agendas. The Equality Act is a perfect example. This bill puts people who live out their faith on unequal footing under the law. It imposes sexual orientation and gender identity provisions on religious schools and universities, rejects the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and so much more. FRC's new publication on this legislation is a brief summary of the dangers this bill poses towards those who hold a biblical view of marriage and the family. Visit frc.org/equalityact to learn more.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
What's at stake in this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith, to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. Family Research Council and FRC Action stand at the forefront of this battle. In these turbulent times, we trust in God's Word that He is for us and that He will give us a future and a hope of prosperity. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. You'll hear the latest on the threats to our nation's security, your religious freedom, the privacy and safety of our children and grandchildren, and much more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm Peter Sprigg with the Family Research Council.
Chris Gasek here in Family at Family Research Council in Washington.
And we're filling in for Tony today because, in large part, because Tony is at home in Louisiana dealing with the after effects of the massive flooding that's taken place down there, which has affected so many people, including Tony and his own family, his own home, which were flooded. And so we have a very personal interest as well as a compassionate interest for everyone affected in the flood relief down there. So I wanted to mention once again that a couple of things. First of all, Family Research Council is promoting donations to flood relief through Samaritan's Purse, the relief organization run by Reverend Franklin Graham. They are already on the ground working with Tony and his church in the process of the relief efforts there. And you can contribute by going to the to the website for this radio show, TonyPerkins.com. Or directly to the Family Research Council website at frc.org/flood is the link, which will lead you to where you can contribute to Samaritan's Purse relief efforts for the flooding in Louisiana. And please support them in your prayers as well. We are interested in hearing from any listeners who may be in Louisiana and may be interested and willing to share with us your personal experience in the flooding. We'll be taking your calls in the final segment of the program today, beginning at 42 minutes after the hour. And here's the number. It's 1-866-372-7234. I'll give that to you one more time to call and join us on the program in the final segment of 42 minutes after the hour. Just call 1-866-372-7234. And we're particularly interested in hearing from listeners in Louisiana as to their personal experiences with the flooding down there. Now, our next guest is going to talk to we're having a lot of conversation about the transgender movement and its impact on children today. In the first segment, we had Dr. Michelle Critella from the American College of Pediatricians on a new report, talking about a new report they've issued on some of the medical issues. Now we're going to talk about some of the legal issues with Jeremy Tedesco, who is a senior counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is involved in a lawsuit in Illinois right now involving transgender policies in schools. Jeremy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on.
So tell us a little bit about the origins of this case, and maybe take us through it in chronological order, because we've heard about and we've talked a bit about the Obama administration issuing this letter back in May of this year, basically telling schools across the entire country that discrimination based on gender identity, which to them includes denying people access to the bathrooms, locker rooms, and showers that correspond to their gender identity rather than biological sex, that that's a form of sex discrimination under a 1972 law called Title IX. But they didn't just come up with that idea in May of 2016. They've been pursuing it in across the country in individual cases for a while, including in the school district involved in your lawsuit. Isn't that right?
That's correct. I mean, that May, basically the May 13th letter you're talking about from this year was just another iteration of the Obama administration saying exactly what you just said, that their position is that gender identity is protected under a federal statute called Title IX that bars sex discrimination in education programs that receive federal money. The May 2016 letter was probably the fifth or sixth official statement of that policy. They have been saying it to every school in the country through the same basic mechanism, these things called significant guidance documents. That's agency language, federal agency law language, for, you know, basically announcements of positions and things of agencies that they want to send to people who are impacted by the law or regulated by the law. So they've been, bottom line, telling schools since as early as 2010, but specifically since April of 2014, that they think gender identity is protected under Title IX and that they will enforce it against schools if they fail to comply. And we see all these enforcement actions across the country. So, you know, bottom line is the Federal Department of Education about 3 or 4 years ago decided that gender identity is protected under Title IX. They informed every school district and college in the country of their interpretation and then started enforcement actions. The lawsuit we filed in Illinois that we're talking about today was one of the most, you know, kind of publicly known ones because the Obama administration made a big deal about it to send a message to schools across the country that they meant it when they said gender identity was protected. The school had been resisting allowing a male student to use the girls' locker rooms for about 2.5-3 years while they were under investigation by the Department of Education. And the Department of Education finally threatened to remove $6 million in federal funding from the school district if they didn't comply and allow the male student access. And the school ultimately capitulated and allowed the male to enter the girls' facilities, both locker rooms and restrooms. And that prompted us ultimately to file a lawsuit. Now, we filed it on behalf of 51 families, over 130 individual plaintiffs, parents and students combined. And it took quite a while for us to mount that get that group up and running, and they had a lot of work to do to get the group formed. And so we filed about a few months after the Obama administration forced the school to do that. And so now we're in court asking the court to enjoin temporarily the policy so that the girls can have a safe space that's only for girls at their school.
And I think this is important to point out who your plaintiffs are, because you're not just suing on behalf of an abstract principle. And we've got about a minute before a break, and then we'll have you back in another 2 minutes. But you have specific individual students and parents who will be affected by this policy, who are deeply troubled by it in a very personal way. So this is not just an abstract principle. It's you have people who are going to be harmed by this transgender policy.
That's right. They're being harmed right now by it, and we're trying to get it to stop.
Great. And so this case filed in May has finally gone to court. That's the specific news item this week that we'll be talking about. And so we'll discuss that when we come back after our break. We'll be right back in about 2 minutes on Washington Watch.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Still getting earnings reports out by the retail sector. Lowe's reporting very low numbers, surprising everybody, surprising me certainly. I didn't expect that from Lowe's. Did expect it from Target. Target numbers came out. Now, this is in the midst of a quarter where a lot of the box stores did okay. They only did okay because they've been doing so pathetically for such a long period of time. But nonetheless, they did okay. Macy's leading the way there. Target, not so good. Their earnings reports met expectations. But this thing that's really important is their same store sales. Revenue numbers down 1.1%. That's about $1.3 billion. They also cut their 2016 outlook. So Target share prices were about $84 a share not that long ago. We've got to go back to the middle of April to see that. But by the middle of May, we saw share price down to about $66. This is in the middle of a boycott, many of you signing, and a part of that 1.4 million signatures on that boycott from shoppers committing not to shop at Target. Target, obviously, not wavering on their decision that they made in their brilliant marketing strategy to appeal to 0.003% of the population, putting at risk, alienating 99.9% of their shopping population. Pretty amazing. And to say that this brilliant strategy, which led to the boycott, had little impact on the numbers is naive at best. It'll be interesting to see where Target goes from here.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm Peter Sprigg, here with my colleague.
Chris Gasek here,
filling in for Tony today while he deals with the flooding down in Louisiana. And we'll be discussing that, taking your calls in our final segment at 42 minutes after the hour. You can call us at 1-866-372-7234. If you live in Louisiana and have been affected by the flooding, we'd be especially interested in hearing from you. But right now, we're going to continue our conversation with Jeremy Tedesco from the Alliance Defending Freedom, who's involved in a lawsuit in Illinois against a school district, which in turn basically capitulated to the United States Department of Education and to allow a transgender-identified young person to use the facilities of the opposite biological sex. Jeremy, tell us exactly what arguments ADF is making. Why do you think that this policy violates the law?
There's several reasons for it. From the standpoint of the federal government's actions, the agency, Department of Education, the bottom line is agencies don't have the authority to redefine terms in a congressional statute. And that's what they're doing here. The term in question is the term sex, and what does sex mean? It means male and female. And it's an unambiguous term. And so once the statute has an unambiguous term, an agency can't come in 40 years later, which is what we're talking about here, 40-plus years after Title IX was passed, and change, radically redefine the meaning of a terms in statute to serve a political agenda of a current administration. That's what's going on here. They don't have any legal authority to say that sex includes gender identity. And so, you know, one of our claims is they violated the law. The specific law is the Administrative Procedures Act, which basically just says agencies are acting without lawful authority when they try to redefine clear terms and statutes. That's what's going on here. But we also have raised privacy and affirmative Title IX claims on behalf of the plaintiffs in our case, the student plaintiffs specifically. Right now, the immediate harm more than anyone falls on the girls that are part of our plaintiff group, because they're the ones that have the male student who's going to be using their locker room while they're changing for PE class. And so we've raised privacy concerns, privacy claims on behalf of them. We've asserted that inserting a male into the girls' facilities creates a per se hostile environment for the girls because they're stressed, they have tons of anxiety, they're embarrassed and humiliated that they're going to have to go to school on every day of the school year because PE is a class that happens every day and it's a mandatory class. They're going to have to be worried about when is the male going to be in the locker room? Is he in the locker room now? Am I in a safe place to change where I'm not going to have to worry about whether a biologically male student is able to see me or me see him?
And I read your complaint.
We shouldn't have to deal with that. Our kids shouldn't have to deal with that at school.
Yeah, and I read your complaint when it was filed, and one of the more dramatic stories was of a girl, a specific girl, who actually has taken to wearing her gym clothes underneath her regular clothes because of her concern here. Can you describe that a little bit more? I thought that was a shocking story.
Yeah. I mean, the question for the school is, how would you expect girls to respond? You know, what do you want them to do? Just go to the gym class? Just go to the gym locker room and start taking off their clothes and changing for gym class? I mean, she really shouldn't come as any surprise that the girls are trying to find a way to protect their privacy in a place where they have every expectation of privacy. And so this particular plaintiff, to protect her privacy and to keep her body secure, she has decided to wear gym clothes underneath her regular clothes. So she never takes those gym clothes off. She goes to class, she sweats, she gets dirty. She just puts her other clothes on top of those and goes back to the rest of her classroom experiences for the rest of the day. I mean, we just shouldn't require students to even have to make those kinds of decisions. And the fact that the school is in that kind of position on a daily basis at the school is really just not tolerable. You know, we think the federal government has no authority whatsoever to demand this of schools. We think also that schools that are demanding it of students are violating their privacy rights and their rights to be free of a hostile environment under Title IX.
I wanted to ask you now, one question that sometimes comes up is, well, what could be done or what should be done for this transgender student? Is there an accommodation that would satisfy the legitimate concerns of everyone involved?
Absolutely. It's what the school district did in this situation for years. They provided the male student who claimed a female gender identity private separate accommodations for years while they were investigated by the DOE. And that's the right choice. Students under Title IX are guaranteed that the schools will provide separate facilities for girls and boys when it comes to locker rooms, showers and restrooms. That's something that the regulations in Title IX specifically guarantee students will have access to single-sex facilities for these kinds of things because of the intimate activities that occur in those places and of the privacy that's needed in those kind of places. And so...
I'm sorry, we're almost out of time. We only have about a minute left. But you actually argued this case in court this week. Is that correct?
That's right.
When do you expect a decision, some kind of a decision in this case?
Well, we certainly don't know. The judge knows that the students are already back at school. They started in school on Monday, and so the girls are facing this prospect of having a male student in their laboratories and their restrooms right now. It's an everyday reality for the girls at the school. And so the judge knows that that's going on, and he knows the interests at issue in the case, and we certainly hope that that he'll rule quickly and rule in our favor to give these girls some relief.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Jeremy Tedesco with the Alliance Defending Freedom, sharing about a lawsuit in Illinois defending privacy and safety rights of students. We'll be back after this break.
On the first day of our tour of Israel, we will stand on the Mount of Olives and look out over the old city of Jerusalem. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. March 9 through 17, we'll be going to Israel, the Holy Land. This is 2017, of course. We'll be flying from New York City, JFK Airport, direct to Tel Aviv, and then we'll begin our 9-day tour of Israel, including Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Tiberias, Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and all the places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. For more information on this tour, you can order a brochure by calling us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Also, you can visit the website twholyland.com.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to take a stand and pray and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith at home, in public, and at the ballot box. And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
With a ministry opportunity, here's Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
$22 billion of damage occurred last year in October in South Carolina due to flooding. They saw rain that they had never seen. It was a 1,000-year flood. And now you and I get a chance to go with 8 Days of Hope this October to help hundreds of families rebuild their homes. 16,000 homes suffered some type of damage. We expect thousands of volunteers to come from around the country to southeastern South Carolina in October. We're looking for roofers and plumbers and electricians, people that know how to paint and hang drywall. There's something for everybody at 8 Days of Hope. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
Help us to be the hands and feet of Jesus. Sign up for at least 3 days between October 8th and 15th. And if you're not able to go, you can still help with a financial donation at 8daysofhope.com. That's 8daysofhope.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. My name is Peter Sprigg. I'm here with my colleague Chris Gasek, reporting from our studio at Family Research Council headquarters in Washington, D.C. Tony is back home in Louisiana dealing with the after effects of the serious flooding that's taken place there. And we are inviting you to call in, especially if you want to talk about our program, either of our guests earlier today, you're welcome to do that. Dr. Michelle Critella with the American College of Pediatricians on gender dysphoria in children. And Jeremy Tedesco with the Alliance Defending Freedom about a lawsuit regarding gender identity policies in schools. But we're especially interested in hearing from any listeners in Louisiana about your personal experiences with the flooding. Once again, I want to mention that FRC is encouraging support for the relief efforts of Samaritan's Purse that are already underway there. You can get more information at the website tonyperkins.com or frc.org/flood, I believe, is the...
/flood.
Yeah, frc.org/flood. And so you're welcome to join us. Let me give you the number. It's 1-866-372-7234. I'll give it one more time. That number is 1-866-372-7234. We do have a caller from Louisiana. We did. It looks like we just lost him on our board here. Well, we do have a caller interested in another issue, Larry.
On the gender issue.
Okay. Okay. We're still waiting. All right. Larry from Oklahoma is calling about some of the gender identity issues. Larry, are you online with us? Larry, are you there?
Yeah.
Well, welcome to Washington Watch. You're on the air. What's your question or comment?
It seems that there's a big thing going with
who goes to which restroom and who, where you dress, and gender is supposed to be okay. I'm not defending that. I'm against it because of the Bible, because God is. But to make it simple, why don't you, all you got to do is make a place for gender, male, one side male, one side female. Still got to be a male or female involved for both bathrooms and dressing. Then you could quit all this everyday stuff there and put it in all the schools. You already got one. You go to some bathroom, there's male and female.
And, of course, yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for that comment. Of course, the issue, though, is how do you define male and female? And historically, traditionally, we've defined male and female on the basis of someone's biological sex, the actual anatomy of their body. Now you have this transgender movement, this ideology, which is saying, no, that's not what defines whether you are male or female. What defines whether you're male or female is your psychology, whether you feel male or female. And if your feelings are in contrast or in contradiction to your actual physical anatomy, these people, the transgender activists, think that you may be biologically male, but if you feel like a female, they say you should be able to use the women's room for restroom, for bathroom, for shower, for locker rooms, and so forth. And this is the challenge.
One of the things we didn't get to talk with Jeremy about, though, is it interesting that school students apparently have fewer privacy rights in this regard than people who are incarcerated in prisons.
Yeah.
Because there are rights to not being viewed by a guard of the opposite sex if you're in a prison.
Right.
Whereas they're forcing students, to be in the presence of members of the opposite sex in this instance. And that's one of the precedents that they're using. I mean, the federal government is trampling all over all sorts of precedent in privacy law. And also it's very retrograde in terms of this sort of notion of telling women that, get over it. And if you're having, sort of feelings of, body identity and, these sorts of, I don't know how to describe it, but that, you're just having problems and it's you're the problem.
You just have to accept.
But, a lot of people have, we've seen the documentaries talking about this where you have women who've been sexually abused and restrooms are a place where they feel safe. So there's a lot more going on here than just, letting some boy into a girl's room.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks, Larry, for your comment. And we have another call from Helen in Arkansas. Helen, you're on the air. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, it's nice to get to talk to y'all for a change. I was wanting to make a comment on the dysphoria in children.
Sure.
I don't believe it's a symptom. I believe that it could. I believe this honestly. Jesus, when he came and solved every disease that he could, that he healed. And when they were healed, they were made whole, right? Right in the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a plain, outright deception of evil spirits, I believe, on our children, in our families. I believe it's the first-person plural demonic attack. The devil will come in a first-person plural and enter the thought into their minds and tell them, this is how you feel, this is what you are, don't you know this, to deceive these children. And this all needs to be addressed through fasting, I believe, and searching the scriptures and calling on the Lord and binding this in the name of the authority of Jesus Christ. And casting it off of this nation and other nations. This is a complete out-war attack against our babies. And these children are helpless without us, our parents, praying. We've got to get a hold of God for our babies. They're at risk.
Yeah.
And so are other people. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Well, thank you, Helen. Thank you for that comment. And yes, I agree that from a spiritual, we're talking about it from a scientific perspective, of course, with Dr. Critella, but from a spiritual perspective, the fundamental issue is that God created us male and female, and so this is part of the order of creation, and the transgender movement is a rebellion against that. In in large part. Now, talking about diseases and so forth, I wanted to mention one thing we didn't bring out, which is there are some people who have what used to be called what are sometimes called intersex disorders or disorders of sexual development, where they have either genetically or in terms of hormones or in terms of their anatomy, they have some characteristics that seem male and some that seem female. Those type of conditions are very rare. And the vast majority of people who identify as transgender do not have one of these medical disorders of sexual development. The vast majority of people who claim to be transgender, who claim that they are a woman trapped in a man's body, are 100% physically normal males or physically normal females.
Right.
And so it is the issue of intersex individuals is one where, you know, we need to address and address compassionately, but it's really completely unrelated to the transgender issue. That's one point that I wanted to make. All right. We have another caller on the line from Daryl in Arkansas. Daryl, welcome to Washington Watch. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Sorry that Tony is not able to be there, and I hope he's able to take care of his family and get his house back in repair soon.
Well, thank you. We appreciate your prayers and support for that.
The reason I called in was I was listening to your conversation, and I'm aware of what the Department of Defense made a decision just recently that as of the 30th of June, any member in the military can self-declare to be a member of the opposite sex at this point.
Right.
And I think the conversation in our culture today is an absurd conversation to even have when we have other issues of defending our nation. But it also brings up some other interesting issues that I've thought about. You take the case of driver's insurance. If people can declare themselves to be of the opposite sex, then how can insurance agencies be able to say, well, women drivers are safe drivers, and then we can lower insurance rates for them? At this point, you could make strong cases to say, well, anybody has to have the same insurance rate. And then you also have cases of, like, affirmative action. How do you deal with affirmative action issues or when women have given preference to be able to get jobs and grants? Now that's going to be overturned because somebody can just declare to be the opposite sex and get the same privileges.
Yeah, I mean, those are very good points. Very good points indeed. It opens a Pandora's box to all kinds of oddities and inconsistencies in the law and in policies and so forth. And the ironic thing is there are some feminist groups, for example, who've been promoting women's rights and women's interests and so forth for years, who are not comfortable with having people who were born men be part of their women's groups, you know. And in fact, there was a dramatic lawsuit. One of these lawsuits in Massachusetts involved a prisoner, a transgender prisoner, and a man who had, you know, claimed to be a woman and wanted to be treated as a woman in the prison. And the Department of Corrections was concerned about placing this man in a women's prison, in part because the reason he was in prison in the first place was for murdering his wife. You can imagine how the women in a women's prison would react to having in their midst a man who was there for murdering his wife.
Sure, he was very popular.
Yeah.
I just want to interrupt for a second.
Okay.
I got a link here, just going back to the disaster relief issue that we've had. I just wanted to say that there's a link here for how people can not just give money but volunteer. And so let me just kind of run through this really quickly. Samaritan's Purse also has volunteer networks. So if you wanted to travel to Louisiana with other people, you could do that as well. But the website let me just see here. I've got a, yeah, there, my phone was doing something here. You go to Samaritan's Purse and look for the SP for Samaritan Purse, volunteernetwork.samaritanspurse.org. And then there's also within the, there's a Louisiana page, and you can go in it, and there's, I'll just read what it says here. If you were local to the area or do not need overnight accommodations, we welcome you to serve for the day. And there are, it says, please arrive at our host church. There are certain times of the day, 7:30 a.m. to 12 or 12:30 p.m. for orientation in East Baton Rouge, Louisiana Parish, Louisiana. And that's Greenwell Springs Baptist Church. That's Tony's church. And there's an address here. And I won't read that out, but I'll just give the phone number in case you want to just call them. So that's area code 985-402-4350, and that's 985-402-4350. But it's you can go to the Samaritan's Purse website and learn how you can give labor, and if you have other people who have some time, you can go travel and go work in people's houses, you know, elderly people or all
right,
sorts of people
who
need,
because
they're got to have people stripping their houses out of, you know,
stripping the carpet in,
and all these sorts of
and
things,
so, and
so that they can dry
insulation.
Out and not get moldy and all that sort of stuff. So anyway, just go back to
right.
you, Peter.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for, and Daryl, thank you for your comment. We'll move on to another caller. We have Lance from Nebraska, I believe, is on the line. To talk about the gender identity issue. Lance, welcome to Washington Watch. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call, and I will definitely be keeping Tony and his family in prayer. And
well, thank you.
And to the people of Louisiana. And I'm thankful for organizations like Samaritan's Purse that are there assisting people in those situations. But I was going to tell you guys, I really appreciate you having people on the program like Michelle Crutella and I can't remember his name with Americans Defending Freedom.
Right, Jeremy Tedesco, yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate people, organizations that are, you know, in the middle of this kind of fight, because there's just so much push by those on the left and Obama and, you know, to really, you know, like in Obama's words, to change and transform American, to really impose this radical ideology on America, you know, through the courts and, you know, the political, you know, the politicians and so on, and it's so destructive. But, you know, I think, you know, on the left, it's really not about what's true or right or what's legal. It's just pushing this agenda.
Right.
Kind of on Americans without giving Americans the opportunity to debate it properly,
yes.
Have all the facts, and then go through the legal processes, your representatives and so on, to make laws. We had this happen in my town. We had.
Yeah, we only have we're almost out of time, Lance. But thank you for your comment, and we certainly agree with you about this agenda. And once again. Go to TonyPerkins.com or FRC.org/flood to be able to contribute to the Louisiana flooding relief.
Or SamaritansPurse.org. Can't miss it.
Or Samaritan's Purse. We appreciate you praying for Tony and his family and all those in Louisiana. God bless.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.